Technology addiction seems to be a hazard of our times. Sometimes we chat on cell phones, text friends, and tweet so frequently it can become compulsive. And online, technology is opening virtual worlds that we can disappear inside, if we want to. Filmmaker Jason Spingarn-Koff was intrigued by the virtual worlds in Second Life. Every day, hundreds of thousands of users log on to Second Life and assume a role in alternate reality by choosing an avatar, a digital alter ego. Spingarn-Koff followed real-life people as they immersed themselves in Second Life, and in so doing, changed the shape of their real lives, and struggled with Second Life addiction. His documentary about the experience is called Life 2.0. He says, you can become anyone you want to in Second Life.
No one knows who you are in real life, or what people say First Life. So there's often this very stark difference between the First Life and the Second Life. And you choose a name which is different than your real name. So as you see in the film, one of the avatars is an 11-year-old girl, and the person controlling the avatar is a man in his 30s.
I felt like she was very familiar and somebody that I'd always known. It was some sort of exploration of something in my subconscious.
We were at Barnes & Noble, and he was looking at the psychologist Carl Jung. And he said something about, you know, how there's a male in every female and a female in every male concept that Jung has, and that he has created a girl avatar. And I said, well, why? What do you do with the girl avatar? And then he revealed to me that she was a child and how that's hugely frowned upon. And I remember thinking, well, I can see why.
People might think that's very creepy, and initially it is somewhat creepy, but over time you understand why he's doing this, and there's a whole community of adults whose avatars are children, because you have to be an adult, you have to be over 18 to join the main part of Second Life.
The story you start with is a woman who lives in New York and a man who lives in Calgary, is that right?
That's right.
Tell us about them.
Well, they're pretty normal-looking people. They seem like really anyone. Amy, who lives in Westchester, New York, has a child. She's married. She lives in a nice suburban home. And she's unfulfilled in real life. Something's missing. And she goes on to Second Life and falls in love with an avatar, this guy, who turns out to be living in Canada. And their avatars explore the kind of fantasy world of Second Life, going on dates and exploring beautiful sunsets and beaches. And they have this romance that blossoms, and then they decide they want to get together in real life.
I use the term emotional adultery because real world's hung up about physical sex, but what's really more important is the emotional attachment you have with someone.
Of course, up to this point, it has been this idealized world in Second Life where nothing can go wrong and they can be who they want to be, where they want to be, how they want to be, for as long as they want to be. It must have been exciting to think about trying to pull that into real life for them.
Well, it's very common. There are a huge number of people who I've encountered in making the film who fall in love. You can even have a marriage, a wedding in Second Life. There are wedding planners in Second Life who do virtual ceremonies for avatars. This is a very popular feature of Second Life. And Amy and Steven, who I follow in the film, allow me to film them in real life. Remarkably, they let me in on what was an affair. They were cheating on their spouses. And they really wanted to build a new life together. And I follow that. You see how it unfolds.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you must have thought of this at the time, that they must have already begun to blur the line between the two lives to let you in to film them having an affair in real life.
In their minds, the real and the virtual get completely mixed up, and their sense of themselves becomes a hybrid of the avatar and the real-life person. I think that's really fascinating.
It's not like I don't have a grasp on reality. I very much do. But my memories of Stephen or time together with Stephen, the way I would characterize Stephen and the wonderful things he's done, they haven't all been real life. When I go over those in my mind, I realize that I'm pulling many real life memories, but also several second life memories of times that we've shared in second life.
The other story that we haven't talked about very much so far is this man who is in his 20s or 30s, who is engaged in first life and tells his fiancée that he has created an 11-year-old female avatar in second life, but she just doesn't want to know about it.
Well, it's kind of weird, you know, if your partner tells you, by the way, I'm an 11-year-old girl in Second Life, and I'm up all night doing this. You wonder, and she wonders, I think quite reasonably, why.
Well, and you film him at one point online being the 11-year-old. Well, you do it at several points, but there is one. You use time-lapse photography, and it's clear he's there for, what is it, 12 hours on the computer?
I think in that instance, it's more than 14 hours straight. You see him up all night. And this is what he would do very frequently. He'd go on these binges, and he couldn't control it. And what was very fascinating is he talks about his avatar as another person, that she has a life of her own. He always talks about the avatar as she, not me. He felt like she had a life that she had to live out, and he was almost powerless. This happens to people. The experience in Second Life feels so real. It feels as real as anything they've ever felt in their lives. And if you have an imagination or certain friends that you start making in Second Life, it can really take over.
One of the things that I learned from her is that nothing is ever enough. And nothing was ever enough for her. Her family, her friends, the things she was doing. She always wanted more, and she always wanted new things, and she never stopped and finished anything. By watching her go through that over and over again, and never be happy with what she had, I was able to see that I am exactly the same way, and that's how I moved from having this great real life, which was amazing, and I was very thankful for, to pursuing this second life for this other part of me that I really didn't have time for.
Well, it's such an odd thing. I think she says at one point that he would do this on his laptop, sitting in bed next to her while she was sleeping at night. And she would turn over and say, are you going to be on the computer? And he'd say, well, just a minute. And she'd wake up in the morning, and he'd still be there, having been an 11-year-old girl all night long.
That's right. And I have to say, it was pretty difficult to film him because he was so immersed in this world, you could barely get his attention in real life. When we'd go to film him, he was often going without sleep. He was having a really hard time. And he'd speak very openly about this as an addiction, as this very dangerous addiction where he was putting everything at risk in order to pursue this second life.
Is he the one who has said that he will always be in virtual worlds, whether he's in second life or not, that there's just no stopping him?
That's right. He's committed, and he struggles with second life addiction, and what you see in the film can be very damaging, but it can also lead to things that he thinks are wonderful for him. At one point, he says, Second Life is the best thing and the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Which I find really interesting, that this technology unleashes something which is so complicated. I don't want to pass judgment on it being necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. It's very much how people use it. But I felt I needed to make the film because the general public was getting this enormous amount of hype about Second Life. What they didn't know was what it was actually doing to people, and that you need to approach these worlds with some degree of caution.
It's 6:10 and I've been on at least 12 hours total. When the show was over, she went home to take apart her room, and she ended up being there ever since because some friends went with her. And a ton of other friends joined her at different points. Probably about 20 people have come through here, and these same three have been with her the whole time. Snoopy here is a girl who she met at Vortex. Snoopy right now is very much at a point that Aya was early on in Second Life, where she's just realizing how deep the addiction runs.
In terms of addiction, what makes Second Life different than a normal video game is there's a sense that this is real. There's no end to it. There are no points. There are no levels. It goes on forever. There's a sense that your friends who you meet in Second Life are your real friends, the real people. And if you forge very close relationships, you can go in there all the time, and those friends can become the most important friends you have in your life. I don't think there's anything wrong with that necessarily. But if you have a partner or real life friends, at a certain point, you have to moderate it.
It's obviously a fascinating place, then. The fascination is not going to go away anytime soon, is it?
It's not. It's growing. Last year, there was about $500 million spent within Second Life. And I think this is the beginning. I think virtual worlds are a lot bigger than just Second Life. There are many more virtual worlds out there, and there'll be many more to come. So I think it's something we should watch and start thinking about the way we want them to be, the way we want to use them, and find a way to use them for good.
Jason Spingarn-Koff is the director of the documentary Life 2.0. The film was screened at 2010 Sundance Film Festival.